So, good morning. My name is Harold Ogle, Program Manager for the Java Community Process Program Management Office. And this morning we're talking about transparency and general tips on how to run an expert group. So I'm going to begin with talking about what we mean by running an expert group. I'm going to talk a little bit about the tools that the PMO provides for running an expert group, and then we're going to hear from Mike Milicic talking about his experience running expert groups, and we're going to hear from Ed Burns talking about his experience running expert groups. So, talking about running an expert group, when you form your expert group, it's important that you have a plan for how you're going to run your expert group. That could be as loose as having a guideline for how you and the expert group are going to determine how you operate. So you can do it democratically that way, or you can have a guideline clear in your mind from the beginning as to how you're going to do, how you're going to collaborate together, which tools you're going to use to collaborate, how you will make decisions, and the like. What's important is that you have make that clear from the beginning when you have your initial meeting with your expert group or each of your experts individually, that you get together and say, this is how I see that we're going to do things. Because getting off on that right foot is going to help you a great deal later on and hopefully avoid confusion with the experts. So some of the things to consider is whether you're going to be voting, which decisions are going to be open to the group, and which decisions you are going to make solely in your capacity as spec lead. Who is going to do what within the expert group? Are you going to divvy it up based on particular, particular skill sets that the experts have, particular areas where the given expert is well qualified to work on a particular thing and go off on his own and work on that piece and then bring it back, or is everything going to be worked on by the group, or are you going to split up into smaller groups within the expert group? That, of course, depends on the size of the expert group as well, but it's something to keep in mind and to have clear, or at least determine with the expert group when you first get started. Talking about transparency, how will you communicate with the public? Are you going to have public mailing lists and virtually all of your work is going to be done there? Are you going to have public fora that you have open to the public for them to provide feedback while you have a private mailing list or other communication that the expert group does most of its work on? How does the public communicate with you? Is there another mechanism that you're going to use other than using the comments aliases that the JCP website provides? What guidelines are you going to have for responding to the public feedback? Are you going to respond to them yourselves, or are you going to take the comments that you receive to the expert group, or are they going to be completely open so that as soon as a comment is posted, everyone within the expert group and the public sees it? Those are clearly different levels of transparency, something to have in mind, again, when you form your expert group. And also, part of transparency is how you're going to make your drafts available to the community. Are you going to make continual revisions and have a site available where you make those revisions available continuously to the community for review and feedback, or are you going to just use the milestones that are laid out in the JCP process? So when we talk about transparency, just a note on transparency, we're talking about what your schedule is going to be, when people can expect to have those milestones, how soon the final release is going to be, what progress you're making, what's happening between the milestones, whether you make drafts available continuously outside of the milestone structure of early draft review, public review, proposed final draft, and final release. It's also talking about how the expert group operates, how is communication going within the expert group, how are the different people working on the specification. Is there going to be contributions to the reference implementation and the TCK? That may be that you're deciding to work on that in something like an open source model, including an open source model. How people provide feedback. Sometimes spec leads have operated in a very open fashion, but haven't made that information available on the JCP website. And people come to the JCP website and have no idea that there is another open source project going on, say, on Java.net. And so there's a disconnect there. Part of the transparency is making it clear to the community how they can communicate and how they can review what's going on and how they can communicate with the spec lead as well as the expert group. So just a broad overview of the sorts of things that we're talking about when we talk about running an expert group and transparency. So some ways that spec leads have run their JSRs more transparently, using public mailing lists or fora so that people can post their concerns, questions, and others can see those questions and the responses to them. Expert groups get together, have meetings, and sometimes they post those meeting summaries or minutes publicly so that people can read an overview of what the expert group is working on, what areas of the specification are proving more easy or intractable in figuring out and coming up with drafts. Some spec leads and some expert group members also blog about what's going on and make those advertise those blogs so that people can follow that particular viewpoint as to how the JSR is progressing. There are also collaborative sites, open source projects, and the like that many expert groups use more and more, and so people can contribute that way, can participate directly in the development of the specification. There's also the idea of having issue trackers or wikis so that people can post issues that they have. Say if there's an earlier version of the specification and the expert group is working on a revision, or there are drafts posted already and people go off and play with a draft and they come up with questions or issues, they can post them there. And again, all these things are great, but they're worth a lot less if the information isn't posted somewhere so that people can see it when they come to the JSR website, the detail page of the JSR. And they won't know that stuff exists if it isn't advertised. So, tools that we provide as the PMO through the jcp.org website, there's an expert group alias that every JSR has by default for private communication within the expert group. So anyone who's on the expert group can see it, and anyone who's not on the expert group cannot. There's a community update page which spec leads can update, can provide running commentary on how the expert group is going, as well as providing interim drafts between milestones, if they wish.
It's good to point out that that community update page is available to JCP members only.
Right? Yes, right. So JCP members can view that update page and download drafts or whatever is made available there.
I just uploaded one.
Very good.
A draft.
You can also make updates to the JSR detail page. So the people go to the JSR and they can read the proposal. They can view the status table that shows which milestones are there. And there's also an update section so that spec leads can communicate with the PMO to make those updates. At some point in the future, with the next revision of the website, the spec lead should be able to do that directly. At the moment, it involves communication with the PMO, but that's something you can do at any time. Send mail to admin@jcp.org with, "I'd like to have this information on the JSR page." That can be an update to Section 218 of the JSR, which is the schedule. No, I'm sorry. It could be any section. 218 is the anticipated business terms. Excuse me. But it could be an update to the schedule or any other part of the JSR. Each JSR by default also has an observer's alias, which the spec leads administer. This is made available so that if people are interested in getting updates and having a conversation with the spec lead about the progress of the JSR, they can be added to an alias so that the spec lead can make announcements and have a discussion, but can also just, depending on the spec lead, can use it as a way of announcing what's happening in the expert group. And we in the PMO, myself and my co-workers within the program management office, are also available to attend expert group meetings. Usually we attend kickoff meetings for expert groups if we're invited, so that we can talk about how the process works. Often the expert group, different people on the expert group are unfamiliar with how the process works, and we can come in and talk about, give a broad overview of how the milestone process works and how what the timeline is for producing drafts and holding reviews and how quickly materials can get posted to the website, and as well as how they can escalate if they feel that they're not being heard within the expert group. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Milicic, who has run several JSRs, different iterations of the mid-piece spec. And those are JSRs 118, 271, and 307. So I'll turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Harold. Okay, so I guess what I'll talk a little bit about is how specifically MIDP3 is probably the best example. How in that expert group we've taken the framework that the JCP provides and done a few things that are extensions to it and are specific to what the community was asking for the next expert group process in MIDP. And that's primarily what drove a lot of the decisions to structure the EG the way I'll talk about next. So all of the components, all of the tools that Harold mentioned are in use in each of these JSRs. And in addition to that, we have a little bit different approach on a site that Motorola maintains for its open source efforts at large, and that's at opensource.motorola.com. So what we did at the beginning of MIDP3 was essentially make the expert group as large as it needed to be from the community, so that it was as inclusive as possible. And that's, I guess, one of the first points I'd make about transparency was I think maybe a lot of times expert groups or spec leads may be a little bit tentative about building a large expert group. And one lesson learned, I guess, from MIDP is that that seems to not ever be a problem, really, in practice. And the reason why, I think, is it gets back to something, Harold, you mentioned a few minutes ago. Especially in a spec that's as large as MIDP, there's a lot of interest in general for the progress, and then the technical interest is usually focused on specific pockets of the spec. So there may be interest, you know, by one group of people for you know, persistent storage, and another group on midlet life cycle, and another on, you know, high level UI components. But generally, you don't get a lot of overlap in these areas. So what's worked really well for us is to open the EG to pretty much all of the mobile community, and even in some cases beyond, and provide access to all of the artifacts that the expert group builds in the opensource.motorola.com site, and allow specific areas of interest to be sort of subscribed to by each of these different pockets, these different groups. So that's one point I was going to make. Another is, you know, Harold, you mentioned the process. How are you going to run the EG? And the structure of the SourceForge software on opensource.motorola.com let us build each of these technical areas of expertise sort of into compartmentalized and distinct and separate efforts. So if you have a look at the site, and in general, basically you can see, even if you're not on the expert group, you can see an area that is available for external comments in addition to the mailing list alias. And one of the things that I do is, as questions come in from the JCP mailing list alias, I also post them here in one of the discussion forums that's public. But you can also see, once you join the ED, which is pretty simple, you can also see discussion areas that are specific to each of the major functional component portions of the spec. So that's you know, been very useful to do things like gather requirements at the beginning of the process, develop and discuss use cases, discuss alternative designs, and in the end, you know, come to conclusions about what will be included or excluded from the spec. So let's see, another tool that we've used sort of that follows on to the discussion areas is artifact trackers. And I guess the best way to think about those is they're essentially bug report type issue tracking, just as you would find in pretty much every other kind of software development. And again, by functional area, by the portions, each individual portion of the spec, issues can be entered and tracked there that are, you know, specific to actually to each Javadoc package that's in the specification and each front matter chapter. Something else I think has been important for transparency is anyone can create an artifact, an issue, in one of these trackers, and how we've run the group, the expert group to date, is when there are new issues that come up, they either fall into, you know, one of three or four categories. They're pretty straightforward. It could be that it's an issue that's already been identified, and then there's a way in the tool to link that issue to something else. It could be that it's an issue that's broad or outside of scope, and we'll generally discuss those and in the end make a decision about whether or not a particular proposed requirement or an issue might be in or out of scope. Or at least early on in the spec, we had a lot of issues that were in the third category, which are actually things that need to be worked on and closed before the spec can go to the next phase. So let's see, I guess probably the last point I was going to make, at least as far as the tools that we use within the EG, is that Harold, again, you mentioned, you know, who's responsible for which portions of the spec. So there is a set of wiki pages that detail exactly that within MIDP3. For example, each of the chapters has an owner, basically a primary editor, and anyone who gets assigned any of these issues, these artifacts that I talked about previously, coordinates the development and the check-in of the parts of the spec that'll all come together through the chapter owner. And then as spec lead, I own several of the chapters, and I also do the work of making sure that, you know, the spec flows and there's consistency between chapters and JavaDoc and such. So that collection of tools has served us pretty well internally in the EG. I guess the next thing that I'll talk about is maybe lessons learned or things that we, I think, could have done better, and if we were doing this again, what I would like to see us do. So one point I would make there is the EG voted early on to be transparent but not completely open. And by that I mean, you know, again, Harold, as you mentioned, there are JSRs that function completely in the open as open source projects. I know on sites like java.net, where everything is available, you can come and contribute code to RI. And at that was actually the direction I was hoping that MIDP3 would go. And because of some of the market dynamics, I guess, in the mobile space, many members of the EG really weren't comfortable with working in that fashion. So the next best approach was the one that I described, where, you know, I made the EG as inclusive as I could and made it actually fairly easy to join, even late in the process, like now. I know that's something that the JCP isn't terribly happy about, is adding EG members late in the process. But, you know, as the alternative to being as transparent as I would like to be, that's what I've tried to do. So that's one area where I would much rather have, if I was starting this over again, I would argue a little bit more vehemently, I think, for complete openness, or even doing this in a different forum other than the one that's under the Motorola.com domain, if that would have helped open the process up even further. And I guess then the last point I'll make is if things were more open in this way that I just described, I think the progress of the JSR to completion could have been accelerated. And one of the issues that generally you run into in trying to open things up and do them in an open source way is some of the intellectual property and licensing terms. And really, at the end of the day, I think that may have been what gave us some roadblocks for doing things in the completely transparent way that I had hoped we could. When code is contributed to a project, an open source project, and you can find examples of this elsewhere out, in the world, there has to be a clear ownership of the intellectual property, and doing this in, you know, sort of a new way, we were trying to go too fast before that actually that ownership, that IP ownership, could be made really, really clear on the project. So at the end of the day, the code will be developed and released under open source from Motorola, but it's being developed internally. It's not, again, as transparent as I would like to see, where we could take external contributions for the RI and TCK. My expectation is any project that is done completely in open source will, first of all, will foster greater collaboration than even we've been able to see in the JSRs that I've led. And I think it will complete faster as well, for reasons that I think, number one, there's probably greater interest and ongoing interest in the process when developers are writing code and contributing it and integrating it themselves, rather than sort of just waiting for releases. And then second is, when things are done in that way, when there's actually contributions coming from the community, people can see and feel and, you know, build, test with the code. They can test it internally in their own companies against, the kind of implementations that they'll be running it with, versus sort of just looking at, a rather flat, one-dimensional document and waiting for releases of RI and TCK. And I think probably anyone who's following the development community, especially in the mobile space, would agree that moving faster through JSRs and more efficiently in the JCP would really be beneficial. It would be really helpful to all involved. So that's the points I wanted to make. Harold, thanks for inviting me to speak on those topics this morning.
Thanks, Mike. Now let's hear from Ed Burns, who is also a long-time participant in the JCP as a spec lead for JSRs 127, 252, and 314.
Thanks for the opportunity, Harold. Do you have the ability to grant me a whiteboard access that will show up in the recording?
Unfortunately, no. The recording is not going to show slides. However, if you would like to send me something that would function in more of a static slide thing, I can put that into the slide set.
That's okay. I was only looking to do that in the sense of putting bullet items in as I talk about them. But
right.
I'll just talk through.
Okay.
So the main challenge I've observed is two things. One, get a good start, and two, be able to maintain the quality that you have at the beginning throughout the long run of the JSR. And that's a real challenge. I find that it's easier to get a good start than it is to keep things rolling in that same high-quality way. But let's talk about the good start business first. One thing that I've used on JSR 252 and 314, and also that's been shared for use on JSRs 276, 273, and 295, is this kickoff mail template, which I've uploaded to the JSR 314 community update page. And the main idea with the kickoff email template is that this has been honed over a few different JSRs, and it hits all the points that you want to have when you kick off the JSR. Introduction, a one-paragraph statement of the goals, a solicitation for getting to know the other expert group members with a view towards building a map of the skills and interests that we have on the team, and the idea is to use that map to help us with estimates and task assignments. And then we have a section on rights and responsibilities. There we have your rights as a JSR member, your responsibilities as an EG member, and then our rights as spec leads and our responsibilities as spec leads. And I'll go through a few of the ones that are more important. We start with the rights of an EG member, and through painful lessons in JSR 127, we really think it's important to commit to the expert group members that they have a right to a timely response to emails. Because we observed, you know, as spec leads, we're pulled in a lot of different directions inside of our parent sponsoring companies. Some of us have the luxury of doing the JSR as our full-time job, and as a person that has that luxury, I'm very fortunate to do it, and I'm aware of how great that is. Other spec leads that are not so fortunate with their reporting structure have, you know, a greater challenge in providing a timely response to emails if they have other jobs they're doing and they're just doing the JSR as a part of their responsibility. But in any case, the expert group members do deserve a timely response to emails. The issues that you raise get dealt with and do not fall on the floor. Be informed of schedule milestones and release plans as soon as possible. And I have thought for us, for the JSR 314, have your spec leads be fully allocated to leading the EG as their primary official job responsibility on paper and in practice. So that's not possible in every circumstance, but if it is possible, it's good to communicate that. Have expectations set realistically. For example, the EG needs to be made aware that the JCP process can take a long time, and months might happen between when the actual spec discussion work is done and when it is final. So during that time, we're going through the JCP process steps, working on the TCK and polishing the RI. You know, and they need to know that. They might not see traffic on the email list. They might think, oh, this is done. Why isn't it out there on, in the final form yet? Well, it takes some time to get that to happen. Now, as responsibilities as an EG member, we have be active in email discussions on the occasions when we specifically ask for a vote, such as whether or not we declare that we've hit a JCP milestone. Please cast one. Conduct all email in a professional manner, no flaming. That hasn't been a problem on our expert group, but I've seen other JSRs that have that problem. Stay within the scope of the JSR. Very difficult. There's been some JSRs, and we've seen that when they depart from the original JSR scope, they run into trouble when it comes time to cast ballots. So to avoid that, we do our best to write the initial JSR in a narrow enough way to define the scope, but in a broad enough way that there is enough room for the natural process of ignorance reduction that happens when you're developing software to cause plans to change. Responsibility as an EG member is to respect the spec lead's final call on the schedule for the JSR. That's been important for platform type specs that are going into Java EE and other platforms where, you know, we all got to fit into the schedule together, and in the end of the day, it's the sponsoring company that gets to make the call on how things go, and we have a benevolent dictatorship type thing where, you know, the spec lead can say, I want to try to accommodate all of the other stakeholders, but in the end, we have to fit into the platform, so that has to be walked, that line has to be walked in a very careful and respectful manner. So I'll say two items from the rights of spec leads. The ability to make executive decisions to settle deadlocks, and the ability to shut down threads that are digressions. And then responsibilities to spec leads. All new discussion threads receive a response within 2 days from Roger or I, barring planned absences. Now, that one has been really hard for me to do, and this ties into a beta issue as a spec lead. It's very important to know your own strengths and weaknesses when it comes to managing information and avoiding and dealing with information overload. We get enough email as it is, but if you're on a spec lead, if you're a spec lead on an expert group, you have to take responsibility for even more of that email. And if you have a challenge in that, as I do, you got to be extra aware of making sure you stay on task and keep up with those responsibilities. So to receive a response within 2 days from one of the expert groups, barring planned absences. Those are a few of the points from the kickoff email. Now, in the JSF processes, we've been doing it using an open source project for the reference implementation, and that has been very helpful because we have the community and the large community of the general public has access to the source code that is the implementation of the spec, but they only have access to JCP milestone drafts as far as saying what the actual spec looks like. So it's kind of funny. You can certainly, if you want to pay close enough attention as a member of the general public, look at the source code and see where the spec is evolving, but we've chosen to only publish the standard milestones. Another element of transparency we've tried to do is have a group blog for the expert group that's maintained by one of our expert group members. And like any blog, it requires care and feeding to keep it alive. So if your expert group member that has volunteered to maintain the group blog doesn't keep up with it, then it's not as effective. It's not effective at all, in fact. But it is a good idea. If you have someone who's got the time to post weekly summaries of what happened on the expert group to this group blog, and then let other expert group members post to it as well, that can be a very useful thing for letting the public know what's happening. We do all of the other stuff that Mike was suggesting with the open issue trackers and the other points of transparency. So that's a pretty time-tested approach to making JSRs more accessible. We have some naming conventions on the email group that tie into the issue tracker numbers, so we do leverage that quite a bit. And also the email archive that is offered on the archives.java.sun.com as part of being an expert group is something we use extensively to keep up with the organizational memory of the spec, because a lot of discussion happens, and when it comes time to sit down and really specify an issue, it's very helpful to be able to say, oh, you know, we talked about this back in May, let me go and look through the archive and see what we said. This came up in another thread, let me go find it. So that's something that we really use extensively. And that's about it. You know, I didn't have anything fully prepared to say, but I think it's useful to share some of the best practices we've had.
Well, thank you, Ed. With that, I thank everyone for listening to this recording, and if you have any questions, you can contact the PMO certainly, and I assume that you can use the publicly available contact information for the spec leads to ask questions of them. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Harold.
And have a good morning.